You're listening to BBC Radio 4 on FM, where we begin a new Book of the Week. In Forensics, The Anatomy of Crime, the best-selling author Val McDermid explores the history and development of forensic science.
The face of justice we know today has not always been judicious. For centuries, people were accused and found guilty because of their lack of status, because they weren't from round here, because they or their wife or their mother was handy with herbs, because of the colour of their skin, because they had sex with an inappropriate partner, because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, or just because. What changed that was the growing understanding that the scene of a crime held all sorts of useful information and that branches of science were emerging which could read that information and present it in a courtroom. The trickle of 18th century scientific discoveries that turned into a flood in the 19th century and beyond soon found practical applications far beyond the laboratory bench. Forensic science, in other words, turning science into legal evidence, was born. For this book, I have spoken to leading forensic scientists about the history, the practice, and the future of their disciplines. The stories they have to tell us about that often tortuous journey from crime scene to courtroom are among the most fascinating you will ever hear. And a firm reminder that truth is stranger than fiction. The crime scene. Code Zero, officer in need of assistance. It's the call sign every police officer dreads. One grey November afternoon in Bradford in 2005, PC Theresa Milburn's broken words on the radio sent a chill round the West Yorkshire Police control room. Her message heralded a case that touched everyone in the police community. Theresa and her partner, PC Sharon Beshinevsky, just 9 months into the job, were near the end of their shift in their patrol car. Sharon was looking forward to getting home for her youngest child's 4th birthday party, and with less than half an hour till she and Theresa clocked off, it looked like she'd be in time for the cake and the party games. Then, just after 3:30, a message came through. A silent attack alarm had been set off in a local travel agent's shop. The two women would be passing anyway, so they decided to take the call. As they reached the shop, they came face to face with a trio of armed robbers. Sharon was shot in the chest at point-blank range. Later, at the trial of Sharon's killers, Theresa said, "We were a stride apart. Sharon walked in front of me. Then she stopped. She stopped dead. She stopped that quickly that I overstepped. I heard a bang and Sharon fell to the ground." Moments later, Theresa was also shot in the chest. Yet she managed to press the panic button and alert the control room with those fateful words, "Code Zero." Every sudden violent death carries its own story. As Peter Arnold, a CSI, that's crime scene investigator, for the Yorkshire and Humberside Scientific Support Services says, "The scene is the silent witness. The victim can't tell us what happened. The suspect probably isn't going to tell us what happened. So we need to give a hypothesis that explains what has taken place." Right from the start that afternoon in Bradford, CSIs were dealing with the street where the gunman struck, and the interior of the travel agency, where staff had been threatened, pistol-whipped and tied up. In the street, there were bloodstains that had to be photographed and analysed by blood spatter specialists. A fingertip search revealed 3 bullet casings from a 9mm handgun, one of the standard, easily obtained illegal firearms used by career criminals. Ballistics experts were able to determine that the bullet had been fired from a Mach 10 machine pistol. Witnesses revealed that the robbers had made their getaway in a silver 4x4 SUV. At once, the traffic police began scanning local CCTV footage. They soon spotted the vehicle. Analysts were able to tell detectives that the silver 4x4 had been hired at Heathrow Airport. When its number plate was put into the National Automatic Number Plate Recognition System, within hours, the Metropolitan Police had found the getaway car and arrested 6 suspects. But the men who were arrested were quickly able to prove that they'd had no part in the fatal robbery. They were released without charge. It looked like the police had hit a dead end. Once more, though, the CSIs came to the rescue. A search of the car revealed rich sources of evidence, a Ribena drink carton, a water bottle, a sandwich pack and a till receipt. The receipt came from the Woolley Edge service area on the M1 south of Leeds. When police examined the CCTV footage from the shop, they spotted a man buying the items found in the car. Meanwhile, those items were being examined for fingerprints and DNA, and when the results were run through national databases, the police found the names of six suspects, all connected to a violent criminal gang in London. Now, it was only a matter of time before the guilty men were tracked down. Three of them were convicted of robbery and manslaughter. Two were convicted of murder and given life sentences. One had managed to flee to his native Somalia dressed in a burqa, pretending to be a woman. But West Yorkshire police refused to give up, and after an undercover Home Office extradition, finally he too stood trial and was sentenced to life in prison. Sharon Beshenevsky's law enforcement family never laid down. They made sure that every available resource was thrown into the hunt for justice. Peter Arnold says, "The public's expectations are often raised by what they see on TV. We end up feeling like the bad guy because we can't deliver what they're expecting." He's referring to the CSI effect, named after the famous American TV series CSI Crime Scene Investigation. However, many see it as a sign that ordinary people are getting a basic grip of forensic science, even if it is an imperfect one. In one extraordinary case in 2011, a man had been prowling around Chippenham in his car for months. He would identify a woman, pull on a black balaclava and gloves, and drag her into his car, where he would rape her, and then force her to clean herself to destroy the forensic evidence. He was caught out when his final victim tore out some strands of her own hair and left them in his car. She told the police that whether or not she survived, she knew there would be an investigation and that this would provide DNA evidence. She said later, "I've always been a fan of CSI programmes. I've watched so many of them. I know what to do and how things work." With the help of her hair and the spit she'd also deposited on the car seat, Lance Corporal Jonathan Haynes was convicted of six rapes. As always, detectives relied heavily on the information supplied by the forensics team. Fire scene investigation. Fire scenes vary in their complexity, but even relatively simple ones challenge the investigator, who must try to reconstruct a destructive chain of events. Let's take a typical scenario. A passerby sees a house on fire and calls the fire brigade, who put it out. A structural engineer declares the building safe to enter, and a fire scene investigator like forensic chemist Niamh McDade arrives to determine the origin of the blaze, why it happened, and how it spread. First of all, and unusually for a forensic practitioner, Niamh may interview eyewitnesses. Where exactly did they see the fire? Was there yellow flame and white smoke which petrol gives off? Or the thick black smoke of burning rubber? Getting the best out of eyewitnesses is a skill. Niamh is often talking to people on the very edge, sometimes after the centre of their world has burnt down. Occasionally, the fire investigators may have to stop the interview and let the police know that this person might have turned into a suspect. The talking over, Niamh walks round the outside of the building and lets things sink in. Are there patterns of smoke on the walls? Anything potentially significant in the garden, like a petrol can or cigarette end scattered about? Then she walks through the building, looking for anything unusual. Now she's ready to get dirty. She approaches the business end, where the fire most likely started, moving from areas of least to most damage in a systematic way, documenting and photographing the scene as she progresses. By the time a fire stops burning, it has often brought down ceilings and walls, which shield things as they fall. The scene is all the more resistant to interpretation once firefighters have directed thousands of gallons of water into it. Like a pathologist sawing open a ribcage to perform an autopsy, Niamh has to cause more destruction to reach her answers. She works from the area of least damage inward because, as she explains, if the big black hole in the corner is where the petrol was poured, and you march over to that and walk round in it, you'll cross-contaminate your scene. Once Niamh has found the most likely origin of the fire, she looks for potential sources of ignition. Arsonists often leave matches behind, assuming they'll burn away to nothing. but the powdered rock in a match head contains the fossilised remains of single-cell algae called diatoms, tough enough to endure extremely high temperatures. Each of the 8,000 known species of diatom has a unique shell structure, identifiable through a microscope. Different brands make their matches using powdered rock from different quarries. If forensic scientists can spot the diatoms, they can identify the match brand. Then a search of a suspect's pockets or CCTV footage from local shops can provide incriminating evidence. Fire scene investigators will often bring in sniffer dogs, whose sense of smell is 200 times more sensitive than a human's, to find ignitable liquid accelerants like petrol, paraffin and white spirit. There are about 20 hydrocarbon dog teams in the UK, many of whom wear little boots to protect their paws and to protect the scene from contamination. Neve says, "I've seen them in action and boy are they good. They just sit down and indicate when they smell something." Once a dog has identified the presence of a hydrocarbon, the fire investigator starts to bag the evidence. In the laboratory, forensic chemists will analyse the fire debris submitted. If their tests show petrol, then the next step may be to carry out petrol branding. Most molecules in a can of petrol will evaporate at room temperature, which is why you can smell it. But manufacturers put additives in their petrol which do not evaporate. The additives make car engines run more efficiently and can survive very high temperatures. They're also quite specific to different brands. Petrol branding was important in obtaining convictions following one of the most distressing house fires in recent memory. At 4 a.m. on the 11th of May 2012, a fire began burning the inside of the front door of 18 Victory Road, Allanton, Derby. 2 minutes later, it had raced up the staircase to the open doorway of a bedroom full of sleeping children. Their father, Mick Philpott, called 999. Jade, John, Jack, Jesse and Jaden Philpott, aged between 5 and 10, died at the scene. And Duane Philpott, aged 13, died later in hospital, all from smoke inhalation. Hours after the flames had been put out, Matt Lee from Derbyshire Fire Service arrived at the scene. A colleague had found an empty petrol can and a glove near Victory Road, so Lee was on especially high alert for arson. He removed the top layer of debris from underneath the front door and a hydrocarbon dog started barking. Lee packaged the material and sent it off to forensic chemist Rebecca Jewell for analysis. Over a period of 6 months, Rebecca Jewell received various samples from the scene. In the abandoned plastic tank, she found a mixture of additives, including those from Shell petrol. She found Shell additive on Mick's boxer shorts and right trainer. She found Total additive on leggings, a thong and a sandal belonging to his wife Mairead, and on the clothing of Paul Mosley, who had been charged with helping the Philpotts set the fire. All three defendants were found guilty of manslaughter. Mairead and Mosley were sentenced to 17 years in prison, and Mick to life. Whether fire obliterates someone's property or their dearest relative, the investigator works at the point of collision between nature's most violent force and the human world it wrecks.
Val McDermid was reading from her new book, Forensics, The Anatomy of Crime. It was abridged by Sian Preece and produced by Allegra McElroy. Tomorrow, we find out how insects can reveal vital information about a crime scene.
I am a strange mixture of an academic and a cowboy.
Life at the age of 95.
I've just bought myself a new sports car. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
The 3,000th Desert Island Discs.
You have flown more designs of aircraft than any human being in history. In my notes it says 487.
The former Royal Navy test pilot, Captain Eric Winkle Brown, in a landmark Desert Island Discs on BBC Radio 4 this Friday morning at 9 and then available on our website. In a couple of minutes, the popular science writer Mary Roach will be talking to Jane Garvey about her book Gulp on the mysteries of the digestive system and how has life changed for women and girls in China.